Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. No plan, no peace. This is where the U.S.-Israel war in Iran stands. This state of affairs has profound implications for the global order. American military force has reached an important limit. Today, military might does not ensure domination, particularly when there is no coherent strategy. Crosstalking the lack of strategy, I'm joined by my guest, Stanley Cohen in New York. He is a human rights lawyer. And in Washington, we have Riad Jarrah. He is the policy director at Democracy in the Arab World Now. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Stanley, ever since the advent of this war of choice, I've been considering changing the name of this program from Crosstalk to What's the Strategy? Because every time we talk about this war of choice, that is the most fundamental question that always percolates up. What is going on, Stanley?
Well, Israel's getting everything it wants.
Exactly.
It's received the subterfuge and the cover to continue its Gaza genocide, to continue its slaughter and mass occupation and disruption in Lebanon. Donald Trump gets away from Epstein. He gets away from quote-unquote affordability. So even though it is hurting him in the polls, this plays directly into the hands of Netanyahu, himself a political candidate once again. There is no strategy, but they don't care. Let it keep going. Slow motion, murder, bombs, rest, murder, bombs, rest. We get political mileage out of it, both Netanyahu and Trump. Unfortunately, the narcissist of Mr. Trump, failed to understand that after 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 months, the world gets tired of his rhetoric. And his dementia sets in as more obvious to everyone watching him.
Well, and the world is a worse place by the day as this war continues. Right. Also, the kind of the same question to you. I mean, if there is a strategy, and I'm not going to disagree with one word that Stanley had to say, but you could call it double down and hope.
I don't think there is a clear strategy. It is, at this point, very clearly another forever war, which is precisely what President Trump promised not to bring back to the United States. There is absolutely no strategy. But I will also push back a little bit on what Stanley said. I don't really think that Trump and Netanyahu are necessarily on the same page. There are definitely divisions between the two of them, because this is mostly Netanyahu's war. It is not America's war, and it is not Trump's war. Trump is hurting in the polls. The United States is hurting as a country. We're not really reaping any benefits for this war, but Israel is.
Well, and I think one element both for all three of us to mention is that some people are making a whole lot of money off of this at the same time. Stanley, let me go to you. I mean, let's kind of parse it through. So the strategy is regime change, maybe not. Win the war. What does winning mean? Open the strait. Oh, but the U.S. controls the strait. And of course, the overall broad brush is no nukes, okay? So we actually, it's kind of potpourri here. You can kind of pick whatever you want. But the strategy being employed, if there is such a strategy, it's not achieving any of those goals whatsoever.
Well, it depends upon what the goal is. Trump's goal from day one has been to deflect. It's the name of his autobiography, I Deflect Better Than Anyone. So when Netanyahu came in and worked the room, as he's tried to do for decades with every other American president, convincing them, you have to attack Iran, you have to attack Iran, they're going to drop a nuke on New York City tomorrow, Trump jumped in and said, fine, let's work the room. Why? It deflected from point A, B, C, D, and E, whatever he saw as his political problems and his public image in the United States and in the world. Trump doesn't care about what happens other than Donald Trump. So the absence of a strategy is no surprise. Everything of Donald Trump is no strategy, and that plays directly into the hands of Netanyahu. Netanyahu wants deflection. Netanyahu wants to continue genocide. Netanyahu wants to continue screaming victim, victim, victim. Netanyahu wants to take more and more of the south of Lebanon. Netanyahu wants to bomb Beirut. Meanwhile, the United States is funding it. The United States is supporting it. Yes, there is some pushback in Congress right now, but with the elections coming up, every day, Trump takes a look at this and says, okay, how do I work the room? And the room for Donald Trump is cash. The room for Donald Trump is how much money could his sons and thus he make from the military-industrial complex, which they are now invested in. So this is an economic wonder for Donald Trump and a political safeguard for Israel, because Israel gets to say, oh, we're doing what we have to do to defend ourselves. Look at the Iranians. Meanwhile, they talk about the Strait of Hormuz. They don't talk about the problems with Bab el-Mandab, the Strait and the Red Sea, in terms of what's going on there. And the price of gasoline goes up to $1,000 a week. So you'll have to live with it, says Trump. I'm going to give you $5,000 when you reelect me. That's where America is at right now. Not even ashamed of attempting, of trying to bribe the American body politic. That's where we are at.
Yeah, right. But you know, the so-called blockade that Trump's saying is like an iron wall. It's not. The problem with this strategy of lack of strategy is that the Iranians have a vote in all of this, okay? I find it more than a bit amusing, always the midterms are some kind of litmus test here. Well, the Iranians can upturn that apple cart at a moment's notice. They've been warning that they can do that. I think it was in the last news cycle over an aircraft carrier group, a ballistic missile, supersonic missile, went over it. Well, that's a clear indication that they know where those ships are, and they probably can hit them. So they have a vote in all of this. So it's not a one-way track from the White House. It's actually very dangerous, because Iran looks at the blockade as an act of war, and they will react accordingly. Right.
I agree 100%. I mean, President Trump is putting himself and the United States in danger. He's very vulnerable by continuing this forever war that has absolutely no strategy and no goal at this point. What we have seen in the last 6 months is that the Iranian government seems more emboldened. They're more the reactions are much stronger than before. The new Iranian leadership is not as indecisive as the old Ayatollah Khamenei, who was assassinated by the U.S. and Israel. And Iran continues to bomb U.S. bases around the region and really destabilize the entire region. Any country that is taking the United States side in this war, Iran doesn't seem to be weakened by this. So keep in mind that overall, of course, Iran has gotten a lots of painful hits. Oh. But Iran's tolerance to pain is much, much, much higher than our tolerance to pain here in the United States, because for them, it's an existential war. For us here, it's a war of choice, and our level of tolerance is just, we can't tolerate minor inconveniences, just minor. If it becomes a little bit too much of a pay on the pump or disruption of interest rates, we don't want this war. But from an Iranian perspective, although they have less of a firepower, they have a much higher tolerance. And this can go on and on for a long time. So what we're seeing is that President Trump has put himself and the United States in this very bad position, where we are stuck in a forever war that has no exit. And the only people who are reaping benefits are the Israeli government. Netanyahu is sitting on the back seat now. He's very happy to see the U.S. fight with our blood and our treasure, a war that he wanted us to fight for the last 30 years.
Yeah,
let me just add one thing.
Go
let
ahead,
me just
Stanley.
Add one thing.
Go ahead.
The one weapon that Iran is far superior to the United States and Israel is experience. The leadership of the Iranian government, whether it's the IRGC, whether it's the political wing, you can assassinate whoever you want to assassinate. We're talking about a 5,000-year-old culture. We're talking about a government that's sophisticated. We're talking about a government that is experienced and seasoned. We're talking about a government that's had to walk this tightrope forever because of Israel. The United States, on the other hand, who's running this country? Donald Trump? Pete Hegseth? His cabinet of novices, of sycophants, of people who just bow and say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. So you have the ultimate weapon is the sophistication, the experience, the vision and view of Iran and 90 million people, we ain't talking about Cuba or Venezuela here, versus this novice Wall Street gang that is weighing over their head, that comes to these positions of death, of yes or no, without a drop of experience. Hegseth has fired almost every experienced and seasoned leader in the Pentagon. You've got children running the Pentagon. You're running out of weapons, which you shouldn't be using in any event. What you have left, you're giving to Israel to drop bombs on Gaza and on Lebanon. So that is a key test here, which is overlooked in the United States. We like to pride ourselves on being the best, the brightest, the prettiest, the most seasoned. We're none of that. We are a state that is run by a cabal of inexperienced grifters. They could care less about life or death. All they're looking to do is to pump up their own pockets and to keep the propaganda going, and they're doing it very poorly.
Yeah, well, another thing they're doing, right, I think what they're doing is also is this pure deception. I mean, the messages coming out on Truth Social, we can discernibly refute them, every single line of them. And this is something that you can't run forever. You cannot run a forever war on deception. 1 minute before we go to the break. Go ahead in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, this is how President Trump has run his entire presidency and campaign. It's a post-truth campaign and presidency that is based on what he says are the new facts for the day. Some people believe him, most don't.
Yeah, but those that don't believe him is growing. And again, they talked about inconveniences. I mean, the gas pump is a very important litmus test in American politics. We all know that.
That you can't fake, you know, when you go
to
the gas pump.
You can't fake that. You can't fake your grocery bill. You can't fake that, okay? And that is, you know, and you can't fake diesel prices, okay? That's something, you know, that hits his constituency really, really hard. So I want to talk about the midterms a little bit in the second part of the program. In lieu of that, gentlemen, we're going to go to a break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the lack of strategy. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing the lack of strategy. Okay, Stanley, I'm glad you're on board today because I need you to explain something to me because I'm just a talk show host. I don't understand complex things, apparently. But, you know, there is a shortage of petroleum on the world market starting with this war of choice that started on February 28th. This is extremely well-tracked, okay? I mean, it's all satellite done. I could check my phone right now and tell you how many ships passed the Strait of Hormuz today, to this point today. So there is a shortage. Well, the price has gone up because of that shortage. Okay, stay with me, my friend. Stay with me. So to lower oil prices, you would want more oil on the global market. But the United States is destroying or making sure Iranian oil and other oil can't make it to the world market. So how is that a strategy? Because it's against the better interests of, well, certainly the American electorate, and I would say for the global economy. So everything is at cross purposes here. Stanley.
Well, I'm just waiting for Donald Trump to blame it all on Pearl Harbor. I mean, every single week, there's a new demon in the room. Every single week, there's a new crisis. Every single week, there's another deflection. This Republican convention in Texas, which is pretty much empty, where, you know, Trump is talking and trying to bribe America is again deflection. They're down to less than 2 months until the midterms. The midterms are going to topple the Republican control of Congress. But let's keep in mind, there's no reprieve coming from the Democrats necessarily. Uh-huh. It was Biden that brought us the genocide, this iteration of genocide, along with Kamala Harris in Palestine. So again, it's this political balance where no, it's Biden's fault. No, it's Trump's fault. No, it's the communist fault. No, it's Mandami. No, I was saving the World Trade Center. Donald Trump is crying now. So there is no strategy. The one strategy that's in play right here is for a handful of the richest in the world to make as much money as they can, as quickly as they can, They don't even care about cover anymore. When the president of the United States goes on stage and says, I don't want to be impeached again, and I don't want my family investigated, because we're all over the place with corruption, so vote for me, and I'll give you $5,000. What does that say about strategy?
Well, I
what
mean,
does it say when
well,
people...
Another good reason to have you on the program, because I have this working theory, if I can stay with you here, is that all of the shenanigans that we all know of, I mean, there was a coin that he just released recently. It sold out. Okay, well, good for him. I have this working theory. He will pardon everyone in his circle and himself before this is
He's going to do that, but what he doesn't understand is once he pardons everyone, they lose their Fifth Amendment rights from investigations, from grand jury subpoenas, from congressional investigations. So by the pardon, they can get called in and questioned about everything, and if they don't answer the questions or they try to invoke their Fifth Amendment rights, they're going to be held in contempt and thrown into jail. And I'll tell you, while most of them may pull a Cohen, not this Stanley Cohen, but the other Cohen, who's now a born-again Trump fan, there are going to be enough of them that are going to say, I got bribed, I got massaged, I was worried about my kids, I was worried about tomorrow, I was worried about what am I going to do when Trump rolls over from a stroke. So again, it doesn't make any sense. And the notion that somehow the Supreme Court of the United States or the Department of Justice is going to save him when he's gone and done and out of office, and especially after the Democrats take control again. Although, come on, let's be real. Again,
don't put any hope. Don't put any hope in those people. Don't put any hope in those people. Ryan,
the one hope is the investigations, because it's gonna expose a lot of grift, a lot of graft. But the problem is, 30% of America says, "Great, just give me my share."
Oh, okay. A topic for another program. Right, let me go back to you in Washington. One of the unintended consequences of this war of choice is that it's barely touched upon in mainstream media, but the United States has all been thrown out of the Persian Gulf, and they will never be returning to the Persian Gulf. They're huddling in Jordan. They may even be forced to huddle at the end of the day in Israel, which would make them a very big target. I want to stress to everyone here, Iran has a vote. Iran can go on the offensive. It is being very, very conservative right now. It knows what it's doing. But what about this issue of being thrown out of the Persian Gulf? Because that actually will have implications for American basing all over the world. Go ahead.
Yeah, I will comment on that. But first, let me comment on your earlier question regarding the oil strategy, which I have asked myself the same question. Why is the United States scoring its own goals by attacking oil supplies coming out of Iran? And that's not just what I'm saying. If you remember the first few weeks of the war on Iran, the same president, President Trump, granted Iran a waiver to export its oil to the world because he wanted more oil. And that was a more smart calculus than bombing Iranian oil going out and preventing it from going. So some of these actions seem very self-destructive. It is harming Iran. It's harming the United States. It's harming the world. But I think it is coming because of special Israeli requests. And that is very, very concerning to watch, that the U.S. strategy is shifting slowly to actions that are harming the United States' interests and the world. And it seems like President Trump is prioritizing these special requests from Israel. And the question is, why? Why would he be putting Netanyahu's interests first? Why would he be putting the interest of Israel before that of America?
Well, it's called AIPAC. It's called the hundreds of millions of dollars that AIPAC pours into the body politic and the electoral system in this country. It's called AIPAC and ADL's control of the political structure in this country, which now, thank God, is finally at long last being exposed, with significant amounts of the American body politic saying, I've had it. We're done with this. But, you know, it's interesting, because what Trump did in terms of the oil crisis was his first plan was to topple Maduro, to seize Venezuela and to cut a deal with Venezuela. But he forgot to figure out that that oil doesn't kick in for 5 years.
Yep.
But to Donald Trump, it doesn't matter. In 5 years, I'll be doing 60 Minutes if Barry Weiss lets me on at that point, and I'll be able to sell whatever version I want. Trump is about his name. Trump is about his statues. Trump is about his reputation. Trump is about his history. He doesn't care anything at all about Americans, Iranians, Gazans, Syrians, anyone else. That's the story of Donald Trump for 60 years. There's nothing new here.
And Peter, I do like to answer your question about the U.S. leaving the region, because that is a huge development that is not really covered well in mainstream media. And that is has some aspects to it are logistical, because many of the United States bases have been actually destroyed. In the region, and rebuilding them will take a long time. And we saw
Iran won't let them rebuild them.
Okay? That's right. But even if Iran will let them build it, it will take years and years of construction and rebuilding. But also, more importantly, there is no appetite anymore to having the United States
exactly. Save
those countries, because even those countries who have, even the governments that have historically acted as puppets of the United States in the region, now they're asking themselves, what is it for us? What are we gaining to have the United States here and get our countries bombed and destroyed and our economies destroyed? And the United States doesn't even use its weapons to protect us. They have all of their weapons protecting Israel while we're being bombed. So people in the region are asking that question, whether it's in Kuwait, whether it's in Saudi Arabia, whether it's in Jordan, where the Jordanian government is putting its own citizens in harm's way.
Gentlemen, there's no guarantee all of these countries, particularly in the Gulf, are going to survive all of this, okay? Stanley, who cares who runs the Strait of Hormuz? Why is it so important?
Putting aside the colonial notion, the linchpin of colonial occupation, that we are the best, the prettiest, the brightest, and control the world, the U.S., the European nations, NATO, and everyone has always had their footprint, their entire body in the region, and they're losing it. But Donald Trump's not afraid, because as long as there's a town called Damascus, Pennsylvania, Trump thinks he's still in the Middle East. I mean, this is the stupidity that's playing on right here. Lost. And in terms of you know, the question of who cares? Yes, we care. When I say we, there is a small body politic in the United States pushing back, but we're fooling ourselves, because we're pushing ourselves again into salvation that the Democrats are going to save us. Unless and until the U.S. understands the Middle East, the countries in the region, and they can expand the Abraham Accords all they want, or they can rename them the Donald Trump Accords. They can call them whatever they want. What those signatories are beginning to see, and what hundreds of millions of people in the region are seeing, is the Abraham Accords is nothing more than a conspiracy. And those people that signed onto that conspiracy, that are now paying the price either militarily, economically, or politically, understand that. So this has been a wake-up call, not just less so for the Americans than for the region. If the Middle East, if the countries of the region, if the Gulf states, if North Africa is going to maintain self-determination and build a future based upon the aspirations, the rights, and needs of their people, they have to cut the connection to the West and cut it significantly now, because we now see what's happening. What is NATO doing? NATO all of a sudden says, not even NATO, the UK says, you can't take products from the West Bank. Meanwhile, we're going to continue to send soldiers and monies and bombs to destroy the West Bank and to destroy Gaza and to destroy south of Lebanon. So there is this wake-up call, this connection that we in the West, many in the West, do not understand, but a future generation in the Middle East and in North Africa in particular of young women and men are now engaged in growing self-determination and holding the future.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked all through this program, where is the strategy? Well, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter, is because there is a strategy in play, and the undercurrent of it is exactly what Stanley was talking about, is that this was the withdrawal of the United States, in this case, in the West Asia, the Persian Gulf, which cannot be a bad thing. It cannot be a bad thing. Self-determination may be the default after all of this here. Gentlemen, we've had a fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Washington and in New York. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.